The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way. Something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. This segment of the Did You Know Show continues my series on the executive branch of government and takes us to that department known as Department of the Treasury, the money place. I thought for sure this would be one of those easy ones, slam dunk, who, what, when, where, why, and it'd be over, folks. Well, that just isn't the case. And by the time we're finished, you will be absolutely amazed at what this Department of the Treasury is involved with. Let me read you from the department's own website. Quote, Treasury promotes economic growth through policies to support job creation, investment, and economic stability. Treasury also oversees the production of coins and currency, the disbursement of payments to the public, revenue collection, and the funds to run the federal government. Remember those things as I point out other things that it's involved with. Usually at this point, I discuss a brief history of the Treasury Department, and for today's show, I will not veer from this process. The Department of the Treasury has as its primary function dealing with the money resources of our country. Remember that, dealing with the matters relating to money. The beginning of this department, so to speak, occurs prior to the Declaration of Independence, July the 4th, 1776. On June the 22nd, 1775, just days after the battle at Bunker Hill, the First Continental Congress issued 2 million in bills. And then shortly after, the Second Continental Congress in July of 75 issued directives assigning 2 joint continental treasurers to handle the business of money for the new entity that would arise out of the bowels of this British colony in North America. Of course, this didn't work well, as the Continental Congress had no power to levy or collect taxes. With the ratification of the Constitution in 1789, measures were put in place to deal with matters relating to money within the confines of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. On September the 2nd, 1789, the First Congress of the United States created a permanent department to deal with the management of finances relating to the United States. Did you know that our first president, George Washington, tasked his friend and aide, Alexander Hamilton, to head this new Department of the Treasury? Did you also know that the Treasury Department, along with the State Department, first called the Department of Foreign Affairs, and the Department of Defense, then called the War Department, were the first and oldest departments of the United States government established in 1789? Now, the first officers of this new Treasury Department would be a treasurer, a comptroller, an auditor, a registrar, and an assistant to the secretary. During this time period, the value of the dollar had dropped precipitously. Lots and lots. And Hamilton proposed the repayment of $75 million in debt at a dollar-for-dollar rate to ensure the trustfulness and solvency of the American currency. At this point, I'd like to quote from a letter dated September the 3rd, 1781, and from a report dated January the 9th, 1790 by Alexander Hamilton on public debt and integrity. The first quote, a national debt, if it is not excessive, will be to us a national blessing. It will be a powerful cement of our union. It will also create a necessity for keeping up taxation to a degree which, without being oppressive, will be a spur to industry. And now the second quote. States, like individuals who observe their engagements, pay off their debts, are respected and trusted, while the reverse is the fate of those who pursue an opposite conduct. Now back to our primary subject, the Department of the Treasury. That small office of several persons has grown into a department that today employs 100,000 employees and is responsible for all things relating to the money resources of this great union called the United States of America. When one goes to the website for this agency and pulls up their organizational chart, what you see, just as in all the other departments, is a chart with boxes stemming from top to bottom. At the top of the chart is the Secretary of the Treasury. Below him, a deputy and a chief of staff. Then directly below are the Office of the Treasurer, Office of Domestic Finance, Office of International Affairs, and lastly, an Office of Terrorism and Financial Intelligence. Now, this is when it starts to get a little bit shaky here. As you might recall from one of my previous Did You Know shows, I was also at one time employed by the federal government, and in my 20-some years had the opportunity to work with lots of different law enforcement guys in many different agencies and departments, including the Department of the Treasury. So when you say Treasury, you immediately think of money, credit cards, booze, taxes. One would normally think it would encompass the Secret Service because they were involved with currency, the ATF, that's alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, and lastly, the IRS, our famous Internal Revenue Service. But wait, when I looked at the organizational structure and chart, I looked high and low, and I did not see either the U.S. Secret Service, the ATF, or IRS listed anywhere in the primary organizational chart as presented by the Department of the Treasury. What one saw was the secretary at the top. Directly off was a deputy, an office chief of staff, inspector general, treasurer inspector general for tax administration, and also a very special inspector general for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. Now, below that level, a secondary section entailed the office of the treasurer, the office of domestic finance, office of international affairs, and lastly, an office of terrorism and financial intelligence. Further below this second level was a third level with six offices, starting with the Office of Economic Policy, Office of General Counsel, Office of Legislative Affairs, Office of Management, Office of Public Affairs, and lastly, the Office of Tax Policy. I then looked within these specific offices but found no mention of those other agencies like Secret Service or IRS. Nothing but more and more levels of bureaucracy. What I then saw below were four more highlighted bold categories consisting of four separate entities. First was Treasury officials, and here they gave a listing and a bio for the secretary and other high-level employees. Then a category entitled offices, and here I found 10 offices composed of divisions headed by assistant secretaries, undersecretaries who are primarily responsible for policy formation and overall management of the Treasury Department. These offices were domestic finance, economic policy, general counsel, international affairs, legislative affairs, tax policy. Here we go, terrorism and financial intel, and the treasurer of the United States. Now, that sounds right. It was here that the position was finally described. The treasurer of the United States has direct oversight over the U.S. Mint, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, and Fort Knox. Also, he is a key liaison with the Federal Reserve. In addition, the treasurer serves as a senior advisor to the secretary in the areas of community development and public engagement. What that means is that the treasurer is not the secretary of the treasury. Next, there were highlighted bold category called inspectors general. There are three, the Office of Inspector General, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, and lastly, that special inspector general for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. Further reading into what this special inspector general does, one finds that, and I am using their words, the Office of the Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program, SIGTARP, they do love their acronyms, a sophisticated white-collar law enforcement agency, was established by Congress in 2008 to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse linked to the $700 billion Troubled Asset Relief Program called TARP. Folks, that's an awful lot of inspecting going on. Now, don't you feel all safe and fuzzy? Now, keep that feeling till the end of this podcast and tell me if you still feel warm and fuzzy all over as to how we are protected. Now, finally, to the Bureau section, where it was listed these. The Alcohol, Tobacco, Tax, and Trade Bureau. But no, this is not ATF, folks. The Bureau of Engraving, the Bureau of Fiscal Services, Community Development, Financial Institutions Fund, Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, the Inspector General, another one of those inspectors, the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, and finally, the IRS. I finally found them, the Internal Revenue Service, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and lastly, the U.S. Mint. And it must be reported here that in 2003, the Secret Service was moved to the Department of Homeland Security. But still, when one goes to their website and reads their mission, the United States Secret Service is to safeguard the nation's financial infrastructure and payment systems to preserve the integrity of the economy and to protect national leaders. So it kind of sounds like they're in two different worlds. Now, listeners, these are not my categories or descriptions. This information is straight from the Treasury website. But what I found interesting was a statement associated with the highlighted category of bureaus, and I quote, "The Treasury bureaus make up 98% of the Treasury workforce and are responsible for carrying out specific operations assigned to that department," end quote. I wonder how many persons are in the workforce and how many are in the think force. Your guess is probably as good as mine. Now, from about.com, I found a more current employment number of 117,000 employees with a budget of $11 billion. Then from Wikipedia, I found 115,000 employees with a budget of $14 billion in 2013. And from the Office of Personnel Management, by their count, only 112,000 employees. I try to come up with some kind of figure to give you, the listener, an idea of what this Treasury Department costs us. And if you compare $11 billion or even $14 billion to a total federal budget of $3.7 trillion, this agency is still relatively quite inexpensive. But are we really getting the best bang for our buck? Now, I started to dig a bit, and I found budget information. And as in other agencies, it was difficult to find the information or ferret out straight answers. You have to be a CPA almost to understand what is going on. And folks, I'm not a CPA, so let's just put it this way. From the Department of the Treasury, in their budget in brief for fiscal 2014 request, I found a final figure of $16.1 billion, while the actual fiscal 2012 enacted by Congress was $14.9 billion. Of that, there was a category called Treasury International Programs, of which the administration requested $2.9 billion, but was only funded by Congress in 2012 to the tune of $2.6. When I went to the actual Treasury International Programs listing, I found that their figure was $2.1 billion. I looked further into the breakdown and found 19 separate and distinct programs providing funds to items like, pay attention here, International Development Association, International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, Inter-American Development Bank, Asian Development Bank, Asian Development Fund. Then there was the African Development Fund and the African Development Bank. Altogether, there were 9 distinct money-spending programs under the heading of economic growth, national security, and poverty reduction. Can you even imagine the level of fraud which takes place relating to these disbursements to foreign entities? But alas, that would be the spark for another Did You Know show. And finally, in doing my research for this podcast series and others in the past, I have come across interesting tidbits of information relating to the various agencies. Now, in a recent article featured by CBS News from the Associated Press, it was reported that the IRS had issued $4 billion in fraudulent tax refunds to people using stolen identities. Within this article, it was reported that IRS, and I'll put this in quotes, IRS sent a total of 655 tax refund checks to a single address in Lithuania and 343 refund checks to a loan address in Shanghai. Now, in another article from WTHR.com, it was reported that IRS agents working at various locations were told by upper management to ignore fraud and to assign ITIN, or individual taxpayer identification numbers, to individual filers. Said an employee of IRS, I quote again, "It's a license to steal." Those ITIN numbers are provided to individuals without a Social Security number, and in one instance, and I quote again, in Atlanta, 24,000, yes, folks, 24,000 undocumented workers listed the same address on their tax returns, and the IRS paid more than $46 million in refunds to that one. Yet another one from the Committee on Government Reform and Oversight, issued August 1, 2013, entitled IRS Pays Out Billions in ID Fraud. Just one small snippet from this report. The IRS rarely investigates these incidents of fraud due to the small amounts of each individual case. As a result, the majority of identity fraud cases are never investigated and the criminals face no legal repercussions. Privacy laws enacted in the 70s have limited local law enforcement from investigating many cases because they cannot access IRS information. There is one other significant aspect relating to the above information in reference to fraud and overpayment. The government, in its own audit regarding an IRS program called EITC, and this is that one called the Earned Income Tax Credit Program, stated the EITC improper payment rate above 20% since fiscal 2003. While the estimated EITC improper payment rate has declined over the years, the estimated payments made in error have increased from at least $9.5 billion in fiscal 2003 to at least $11.6 billion in fiscal 2012. All this for a total improper payment amount from 2003 through 2012 of $110.8 billion at minimum and $132.6 billion at max. These are not small amounts of money, my friends. Doesn't that make you feel really warm and fuzzy regarding doings at the Department of the Treasury and the amount of inspection they're doing by these inspector generals? Well, that's the Department of the Treasury. I've just provided you with a short synopsis of this one department of the executive branch of government. If you have questions or comments, feel free to contact me on the flypod.com site. I truly hope you've enjoyed and learned something from this podcast. Well, until next time in our next Did You Know show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.